Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, classical schools. Our guest expert is the founder and director of the Nashville Classic Charter School, Charlie Friedman. I'll introduce him in a moment, but first my monologue. I became aware of classical schools while reading Ron Dreher's book, The Benedict Option. He notes that in the classical period, the Middle Ages, knowledge was pursued for the sake of knowledge. As Dreher put it, quote, the goal being to pass on a culture based on virtue, to pass on the wisdom of the past, to produce another generation with the same ideals and values, end quote. He quotes noted classical school leader Martin Corcoran as saying, quote, that's what education was for over two millennia. But for the past 100 years, education has become more utilitarian. Today's motto is learn to earn, nothing more. Dreher goes on to say there is nothing wrong in the principle that learning something useful to achieve excellence in science, the arts, literature, or any other field of the intellect. But mastery of facts and their application is not the same thing as education, any more than an advanced degree in systematic theology makes one a saint. Today, the goal of education seems to be to change the culture, to separate the pursuit of virtue from the pursuit of knowledge, in effect, to get away from Western culture. Now, there is no way that can be good. We are our history. We learn from our ancestors who they were, what they did, what they stood for, and what they believed. We need to know how they were civilized and study their civilization as well as our own. Dreher calls this our civilization patrimony. Through it, we become humanized. To be humanized, he said, is to grow by contemplation and action through faith and reason in the love of the good, the true, and the beautiful. We have allowed Western culture to devolve into modern culture, which is accepted by mainstream America. Dreher explains it this way. For one thing, the power of the media to set the terms of what's considered normal is immense, and it affects our adults as well as children. Consequently, Western culture has lost its moral compass. Our more enlightened educators are aware of this and have established classical schools as a course directional shift. We need more of them. Many classical schools harness the power of the trivium. Let me take a minute to describe just what this means, and then we'll let Mr. Friedman tell us how he applies these concepts. Trivium literally means three ways or stages of learning. The first stage is grammar. Kindergartners to sixth grade kids are naturally inquisitive and are both willing and able to memorize and recite lots of materials. Often Latin, math, history, and religion are taught. And as the proverb tells us, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The second stage is logic. Middle school kids love to argue. Who doesn't know that? Never had a middle school kid. So here is a chance to teach them how. Here, critical thinking skills are taught, which help them recognize and identify logical fallacies that they face every day in school, at home, in the movies, in the news, on TV, and on the internet. Seventh and eighth and ninth graders are taught to think logically and to develop the skills needed to transfer those thoughts onto paper for others to read. Stage three is rhetoric. High school kids use grammar and logic to solve difficult problems, become self-aware, and express what they actually think through speech and writing, individually or in groups. Furthermore, they learn how to learn by themselves. They become more independent, think for themselves, form their own thoughts and opinions, and develop their own unique paths in life. Now it gives me a great pleasure to introduce our guest today, Charlie Friedman. Charlie has a bachelor's degree from Yale University a master's in urban education from the University of Pennsylvania, and is the founder and director of the Nashville Classical Charter School. In 2019, his school was named Tennessee's Reward School, the state's highest honor for growth and achievement. A native New Yorker trying to move to Nashville in 2011, he and his wife welcomed their first child, Asher Penn, on December 28, 2019. Welcome, Charter, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. It is a great pleasure to have you on our show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Charter, first of all, how are you enjoying Nashville?
Right. So I've been in Nashville for 9 years. I moved in June 2011. So it is home. I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else as an adult. And now that my wife and kids are here, and my wife is from here, it feels like home even more. And the fact that I've barely left my house in the last 3 months feels like my roots are pretty firmly planted here right now.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here. Charlie, tell us what makes your school a classical school. How does it differ from other schools in the area?
So we think it's helpful to almost imagine that there's not one thing different about our school. Truly, it's everything. And I think that's because, as anybody knows, the sort of tiny details are actually what make up the big picture of any organization, any school, any company, any relationship. And so we really designed our school from the very beginning to be a completely different experience for our teachers, for our scholars, for our families. That being said, I think it might be helpful to understand our school as being different in three really key ways. And so the first one is just who is there and who's part of our community. So public charter schools are public schools. Nobody pays anything to attend. There are no tests or admission requirements to get in. Anybody that lives in Davidson County, so in the Nashville metropolitan area, can come to our school. However, as a public charter school, our school is a choice school. And so families do have to choose our school, which is really powerful because it means that there's true alignment for everybody, and it's an incredibly empowering experience for our families. And so we educate a diverse community. We have families that live the southern tip of our city in Antioch to the northern tip in Madison. We have families that have lived in Nashville for generations and families that have been in America for a few short months. But all of them are really united by a desire to send their child to our school. And we really do feel like having that one thing in common is in a lot of ways more important than the millions of ways in which we're different. So that's the first thing. And that's true of our adults as well. At your traditional public school, adults are hired by the school district. They're assigned to schools. Maybe the principal has some say, but they're working with, you know, a centralized HR. We make all of our hires independently. We create our staffing charts on our own. And so really every person in our building is there by choice. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing that's different about the school is what gets taught. So as a public charter school and as a classical school, we put a lot of thought into our curriculum. We think it's really important. We use a curriculum called the Core Knowledge Sequence, which was developed by E.D. Hirsch and essentially took a survey of thousands of college professors, asked them what would they want students to know to be an educated citizen, and then just backward maps that all the way to kindergarten. And so part of the thinking is, if you want a child to read Shakespeare by middle school, how do you teach them about the Renaissance in elementary school and teach them about kings and queens when they're in nursery school and teach them about poetry when they're in kindergarten? And so all of that is part of our curriculum. And so we have a really knowledge-rich and text-rich curriculum. And even during the closures of the last 3 months, we actually put almost 900 books in the mail to mail to our students to make sure that they were all reading shared texts. Because in a lot of ways, we think that the books you read are part of what shape who you are and who you become. So that's the second thing, is what gets taught. And then the third thing is how our school operates. And so when we think of a classical school, in some ways, we think of being a back-to-basics, no-nonsense environment. So our students wear uniforms, they tuck in their shirts, we're a yes sir, no ma'am kind of place. We shake hands every morning and say good morning. And that I guess that part may change. Maybe we'll do an elbow bump or something like that. But we take all of those things really seriously. We sweat the details, have a very orderly environment. And we think that actually that order unlocks joy and creativity. And I think what I mean by that is when you're in an environment where students walk in straight lines and children aren't allowed to tease each other, you can have, you know, a middle school boy take a class and dance and express themselves creatively because they know that they're in a really safe environment. And so we actually think that that order and that structure really unlocks the creativity and the joy of our students in our community.
I think you're so right about being, I want to say strict, but having guidelines, especially with dress.
Mm-hmm.
I know we grew up in the Midwest, and our kids grew up in a little town near Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we didn't have any such thing as classical schools. We didn't have any schools that had uniforms. But we noticed that on Sunday mornings, we always got dressed for church, and we always had either breakfast in the dining room when we came home, or we went out to breakfast. When the kids were dressed, they behaved themselves. They're automatic. But when they were in shorts and T-shirts, they were into shorts and T-shirts. So I think that's a really important point. Now, you mentioned Shakespeare and some of the classic things. Many of the classic schools that I am aware of teach Latin in grade schools. Do you teach Latin in grade school?
So we teach foreign language, mm-hmm. But we use Spanish and French. And a lot of that was just driven by how challenging it is right now to find really outstanding Latin teachers. And so I would say, particularly if there are college students listening, if you're considering studying the classics or going into education, to know that there's actually a tremendous demand for Latin teachers across the country right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure there is. You know, I wanted to ask you about your son, because your son's a new appendage to your family, or I shouldn't say appendage, but certainly a new part of your family. How's he doing?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So my son is great. We are loving fatherhood and parenthood. He is an absolute joy to be around. And I think that one of the things that's made me realize as an educator, you know, one of the things I would always start to talk about is I didn't have a child because I had 490 children, right? But definitely it changes things. And I think one of the things that's made me realize is just how adaptable and resilient kids are and how eager they are to learn. And I think, you know, my personal belief is that there's probably a tendency, I think, in our schools to, I worry, part of how I got into this work was being so frustrated in a traditional district environment where I felt like we were coddling children, we were passing them along, we weren't asking them to do hard things. And I think even with a five-month-old, realizing, like, you know, all he wants to do is take risks and take challenges and explore. And really, I think it's our work is in some ways to nurture that and give kids, you know, the knowledge that they need to be successful.
I think you're so right. Now, do your school's teachers follow the same criteria for getting a job as other schools? Do they have to be certified and do they have to have degrees?
That's a great question. So two things that I think are helpful. One, our teachers are required to be certified, but we actually have partnered and do some independent certification within our building. So if you're a recent college graduate and you want to be a teacher, but maybe you didn't study education in college, or maybe you studied education, but you were on a work-study program. And a lot of people don't know this, but to major in education, you need to sometimes complete a student teaching assignment, mm-hmm. which is an unpaid assignment. And so if you're someone who's working your way through college, asking you to essentially take an unpaid job from 8 to 3, 5 days a week for a semester, you know, you can't do that. You're paying tuition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of people out there, particularly people that might come from a low-income background or they're a first-generation college student who they come into college studying education, but they actually never come out with the certification or the degree because they couldn't do their student teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've actually created a certification pathway with some partners where those people can come to our school, get trained, take some courses at night, and earn a certification, which has been really exciting for us. And we think that, you know, the best teaching and training really does happen on the job. And so, you know, I know you're a doctor, right? And you probably can only spend so much time talking about the work. At a certain point, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a little bit of what happens in education, where you can spend 4 years sort of talking about the theory of development, but you're only going to get better if you actually teach and someone watches you and gives you feedback.
That's what I always thought about pediatricians. How can you be a pediatrician if you don't have any kids?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've had the kids first, and now you're a teacher.
Yes, exactly.
So your student-teacher relationship or ratio is sort of similar to the rest of the public schools. Would you say that?
I think so. Although, I think one of the places where we have a chance to be unique is, you know, we'll do things like we might make our class size a little bit bigger. But what that means is we're able to pay our teachers more. We're able to have one computer for every student in our classroom. We're able to make sure that every classroom has 800 library books in it. And all of those things can actually make school an even brighter, more enriching experience. And so some of our classes will be actually a little bit larger, but we feel like we're putting lots of resources in place so that that's not all that matters. And then similarly, right, we might be able to have additional staff teach special education. And so you have students who are being pulled out and receiving tutoring and things like that. But that's all possible because our base class size is a little bit bigger.
Are your teachers paid the same as the public school teachers?
They're not. So we try to start them somewhere between 5 to 10% above a traditional district teacher. Mm-hmm. And we do that to try to get the best people in our building.
Sure, sure.
And then we actually offer annual raises. And so if you're working at our school and you're invited to return, you receive a raise. But as a public charter school, you know, we don't have tenure track and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so every year you need your offer to be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can make sure that, you know, if you're not successful for our students, then maybe it's not the place for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I think is most important about education is the involvement of the parent. And when you have kids that live that far apart from each other, how do you keep the parents involved?
Yes, what a great question. So, you know, parents are our kids' first teachers. And then the last 2-3 months have definitely reinforced the importance of an involved parent at home because we've leaned on them and that partnership tremendously. What we find is that, you know, parent involvement in 2020 maybe looks different than it did a generation ago. And that's for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, you have more single parents than you did a generation ago. You have more households where both parents work than you did a generation ago. But the advantage is you also have all kinds of new technology than you did a generation ago. And so we give all of our families a cell phone number for teachers. And we have teachers and families that, you know, they can text in the middle of the day. We can take a picture of your child's work and send it to you and say to you, look how great he did on this quiz, or, you know, we feel like maybe he was a little bit careless, here's what I mean. And so what we feel like is building that really strong, deep relationship is really powerful. And then we actually say to parents, believe it or not, that we want the relationship between the school and the family to be similar to the relationship between a pediatrician and a parent. And so what we mean by that is, you know, if you're a parent and your child's sick, you're going to call your pediatrician. And if the pediatrician says, take a little bit of Tylenol, you're going to give the baby Tylenol. And we want our parents to feel like, hey, if my child's not learning to read, they're going to call the teacher. And if the teacher says, hey, you need to practice sight words with them for 30 minutes a night, you'll practice sight words for 30 minutes a night. But, you know, I think it would be crazy if a parent called a pediatrician and said, my child has a headache. And the pediatrician says, look, I'd love to help you, but I need you to come to the hospital and sell brownies. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, we feel like as a public school, it's a service, right? And, you know, again, it would be crazy to say this, and this really does, it drives me crazy, because I do think parents should be involved and I believe in parent involvement, but I also think schools can't abdicate their responsibility, and it would be so crazy to say, hey, if you don't like your highways, you know, you got to get out there and pave the roads yourself, and you've got to sell brownies so we can pay the people on the highways more. I think if a politician said that, people would look at them like they're crazy. But for some reason, it's okay to say that about schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really feel like, hey, you know, our job is to be the experts on kids and to be the experts on schools. And our job is to facilitate a really strong relationship between parents and teachers.
Charlie, how can you afford to teach the kids and do what you do on the same budgets that the public schools have? And are you an independent classical school, or are you a part of a large consortium.
Yeah, school. So we're an independent school. We sort of, we call ourselves a mom and pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like everyone else, we balance our budget and we have to look really carefully at all of our spending. What I think is that, you know, I wish there was more funding for our schools, and I think there should be.
Have a bake sale.
Right. But I also think if you look at where our funding goes, the reality is, you know, 60-70% of it gets spent on staff. Yeah. And the best thing we can do is make sure that, you know, our staff uses their time really well and that that money is well spent. And so an example I like to give is, you know, as an independent charter school, we can decide how many secretaries we need.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might reduce the number of people in our office so that we can have more people in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might ask, you know, someone to have a hybrid duty where they're teaching one class and then they're also going to do this duty, things like that. And so I just think ultimately, you know, the biggest resource our schools have are people. And if we use that resource really well, there's a lot we can do.
Sure. In your introductory remarks, Charlie, you mentioned sending out books. Did you mean real books or did you mean online books?
Yeah. So we think that, you know, a kid holding a book is just, there's a magic to that that's not going to change.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we were sending real books home to families. We have 500 to 600 books in every classroom, as many as 800 in some of our youngest classrooms. And so every day our kids can go to a library in their room and they can pick out a couple of books. And we think that's a magical experience too, that that's really an important part of being a kid and being at school. And it's funny, you know, years of research, the fanciest, you could try to do the fanciest interventions in the world. And in a lot of ways, if you want your child to grow up educated, the two most important things you can do are read to them when they're little, and then make sure that they read on their own as they get older.
I read a paper maybe 30 or 40 years ago out of somewhere in California. I forgot where now, but they studied just what you're talking about, and they found out the only difference between the good students and the not-so-good students in high school was what age the parents started reading books to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they started at the top, students had books read to them before they were 9 months old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that that's so important. That's why I applaud you for sending those books out.
Yeah, we love it. And one thing I would add actually is I think our schools also stop reading aloud too early.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, we, to our sixth graders, we have teachers reading aloud and we'll do a shared reading experience. And we just think that's a powerful part of being in a community is reading a book all together. And you know, you can have such wonderful, rich discussions. And I just think that's, it gives kids a vocabulary to talk about what's happening in their lives. And that's, you know, essentially one of the hardest things we can do.
You have PE in school, band and choir, that kind of stuff?
Yes, we have PE. We have an amazing pop choir. We think music and the fine arts are really important.
Charlie, I know that you just have 6 grades now, is that correct?
We have 7 because kindergarten, so 6th grade are our oldest kids.
And you petitioned to have another year added, and how's that going?
You know, again, as a public charter school, we have lots of autonomy, but we also ultimately are subject to our authorizer, which is our local school district.
Mm-hmm.
We get about 500-600 applications every year, and we had anticipated that students would leave year to year, but actually students were staying. And so we were hitting our maximum allotment. We were only allowed to have about 450 students, and we were getting to that number. And so we went to them, and it was a very long, arduous fight, actually. We ended up having to appeal and go to a state board. But we've been approved to grow to K-8 enrollment and to keep all of our students, which is really exciting and wonderful for our families.
So K-what?
K-8.
That's great. And what's going to happen to your kids when they leave 8th grade? Where are they going to go to high school?
Yeah, that's the question on a lot of people's minds right now. Our vision is to really equip our students and our families so that they can have a choice of different college preparatory options. And there's some research that shows that when students have a choice in high school, it helps them to make a choice in college, right? Because you've already thought a little bit about, do I want to go to a big school or a small school far away from home, close to home, or sports important to me, things like that. And so we're excited for our kids to have that chance and then look at the data, see how they do, and decide if we should be taking on a bigger bite of the rest of their lives.
Charlie, I'm so excited to talk to you, and I'm so sorry that we're running out of time.
That's okay. This has been fun.
It's been great. We have to wrap it up. Thank you for coming in, and thank you, our listeners, too. You are listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Now, before I sign off, one quick story. I was born and raised on a farm in southern Minnesota and attended a one-room, one-teacher school. You've heard that right, one teacher, mm-hmm. 8 grades. I don't know how she ever managed to do that, but she did. Our tiny library was almost as big as the 4x8 sheet of plywood, which made up the table, sitting on 4 orange crates. I don't know if you know what an orange crate is, but it's a little wooden box. We had an old piano at one end of the room, which no one knew how to play, and a small bookcase was built into the wall on the other end. It contained the classroom books, which were not in use that year, and a couple of picture books for the early grades. I don't recall any novels, I recall storybooks at that time, or any other individual books. But on the bottom shelf was an old set of encyclopedias, which we were allowed to read. And on the one other wall was a closed barrister glass front bookcase with a brand new set of encyclopedias, which we were not allowed to use or even open the glass of the case. Now, there were no chairs in the library, so we had to sit on the floor. One day, late in the fall of 1940s, I sat Indian style on the floor for an hour or more reading the forbidden books. When I tried to get up, my left leg would not bear weight. I knew in a second that God had stricken me with polio for violating the library commandment, "Thou shalt not read encyclopedias from that bookcase." After shaking my legs and saying all the prayers I knew, my left leg woke up, my paralysis left, and I walked out of that little cave. But I must confess, I peeked at those forbidden books again and again during my years at that school. I think of this story every time I walk into a school or a library and see the thousands of books available, and even more exciting, the choice of schools now available for our children. Thank you, Mr. Friedman, for your commitment to the kids of Nashville by offering them with such a wonderful school. You have proven once again that USA offers opportunity for all. Now for your homework. Sit down with your family and listen again to today's show on my website, www.parenting-matters.com. And if you live in the Nashville area and are unsatisfied with the school your children attend, check out Nashville Charter Classical School and St. Pius X Classical Academy. And if you do not live in this area, go to the web and investigate classical schools in your area. Either way, go back to parenting-matters.com, click on homework, and comment on your search. Our out-of-area listeners would love to know where you can find classical schools. Now, take your kids to the library, get them all library cards, and help them select a book or two. Remember to take some for yourself and your spouse. Make reading a habit in your home. Then go back to parentingmatters.com, click on homework, and tell us how reading together has changed your family. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.